Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Toni Luisa Rivera. She is author of The Propelled Heart, Moving from Injury to Insight. She was a whirlwind of a doctor, the only chiropractor on a remote part of Puerto Rico. She was inundated with patients, many of whom were out of pain for the first time in years. Wanting to heal everyone, she drove herself to extremes. But what really drove Dr. Toni Luisa Rivera was buried so deep that only in her 30s were the memories really starting to offer clarity. Repeated sexual assaults before the age of 4, a heart crushed by a mother so overwhelmed with the truth that she couldn't find it in herself to comfort her daughter, and a burning desire to be of value to prove her own worthiness. Part memoir, part healing guidebook, Dr. Rivera tells of her passage to insight, allowing injury to transform into the gifts that she brings to the world. Dr. Toni recounts how she listened to her body's physical pain to help unlock those wounds of forgotten childhood abuse, freeing her to follow an inner-driven, more deliberate, more intentional, and joyful way of life, while still serving those who needed help. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.toniluisarivera.com, and that's TONILUISARIVERA.com. And I have a direct link to Dr. Toni's website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Toni to the show. Good day.
Good day. Thank you for having me, Robert.
It is my pleasure. You're in one of my favorite areas of the country. I used to live in Albuquerque, and I love Santa Fe. It's always so pretty up that way.
Oh, it's beautiful. I thought maybe for 5 years, and I've been here 22 years.
Yeah, it has a way of kind of capturing you, but that's great. Well, listen, you know, I'm really, first of all, I do want to say that, you know, whenever I have an author on the show who writes a memoir and really kind of puts it out there about the, you know, abuse or struggle that they have encountered and uses that as a way of helping others, I just absolutely admire the courageousness involved, because it does take courage to do that.
Oh, well, thank you for saying so. It has been quite a journey. You know, you think things are healed all the way, but then doing something like this to expose it has been another level, you know, to really...
Yeah, you know, and you know, the thing is, for those of you who are not authors, you know, when you do something like that, you're constantly talking about it. So it's one of those things that if you go down that road, you have to be fully prepared to be able to basically transform. I mean, you know, and what you really end up doing is really transforming the lives of other people. And to me, that's really what it's all about.
Yes, that's what I found. When I was thinking of writing the book still, I heard one of the author coaches I was listening to was saying, you know, don't write your memoir while you're still bleeding from it. You know, wait till you heal enough that you can share. And it's just amazing to be able to see the light come on in other people's eyes, or that light bulb go off where they can make a healing in their own life. And that's all worth it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and start with the title of the book is The Propelled Heart. So if you would please share with the listeners exactly what do you mean by The Propelled Heart?
Well, The Propelled Heart is a person at the time in their life when they've decided to look at the lessons that life is trying to teach them. So to learn and grow from the experiences in relationship and the workaday world and in their own heart, what's happening, and to learn and grow and use the experiences to grow from. So the heart is propelled to move forward.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, reading your book, when I noticed that, you know, you in the subtitle, it's From Injury to Insight. And now I believe the first part of the book is where the memoir is that aspect, and then the second part is more of the guidebook. Is that correct?
That's right. And, you know, I decided to use the title because there was, when I first started sharing the title, I was so excited, you know, with people, and they said, well, you need to say more than just the propelled heart. Like, what does that mean? I decided on the subtitle of Moving from Injury to Insight because that's the gist of why to share that story. You know, it's part of the human condition. Something usually has happened or that has hurt us or wounded us in some way, no matter the degree. And how can we move from that injury, learn from it, and reap the benefits and bring those insights to the world and give them to others as the gift? So that's why in the first part of the book, I share my story and being very honest and forward with that. And then moving into the second part of the book, we're talking, the different chapters have different topics. And then after the chapters, I actually have the how-to exercises. How might you look at some of these things we're talking about? Physical symptoms, recurring emotions, recurring life situations. And how might you go inside yourself and work with them to gain some insight and bring that on? So it's been quite a journey. And I do have it's hard to read the book and do the exercises. So I've started putting free MP3 downloads on my website so that you can hear my voice leading you through the exercises.
Oh, that makes it much easier. That's great. Yeah, absolutely. For those who are not visual, and, you know, gosh, I mean, I've got some friends who are blind, and one of the things, you know, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to have that auditory aspect to help guide someone too. So, you know, let's go ahead and start with, you know, in the book you talk about that forgotten childhood sexual abuse. I went and read about The Closet, and to me it was gripping. You know, it was like, wow, you know, that this is really intense. You know, can you maybe share with the listeners, you know, how it is that this memory, you know, surfaced, and exactly maybe some of the aspects that surrounded that?
Well, it's a really great question. It's so amazing how the body and the mind can protect us. And in my case, the abuse did stop at a young age, and my mind was able to encapsulate it and insulate me from it. And I forgot and went on living my life. But it was in my body. And as I grew and became a chiropractor and started working with other people, I saw in my practice, now in Puerto Rico, I was seeing like 70 people a day. I started seeing how with certain mental, emotional events in their life, if they reoccurred, their body would present the exact same symptoms, and even the x-ray would go back to looking exactly like it had years before. So I started to study and look for ways to address that mental, emotional component. And I discovered Alana Rubenfeld and the Rubenfeld Synergy Method, which is not chiropractic. It is a body-mind-emotional integration, and it's all about awareness and hearing your body's point of view of your life. One of the requirements for the training was to receive sessions. So I started receiving sessions, and that's when others were touching me. Here I was touching many, many people, helping many people.
Right.
But when I received the touch, I started noticing that I had specific reactions that weren't too pleasing to touch.
Mm-hmm.
And as I went inside, the feelings, the emotions, and the physical sensations were quite surprising, and I realized, lo and behold, I had something that was happening inside of me that needed attention. So the memory started coming in bits and pieces, and it took years, really, to work with it. And The Closet, which is the first chapter of the book, is one of the scenes that very early on came with only a bit, like, I'm in the closet. Gee, what am I doing in there? I'm really upset, you know, what's going on? And it took several times of that memory coming to me like a spiral until it filled out, and I got the before and the after of it, of why I had ended up in there, and the events that led up to it, and what happened, and the vows I made to myself that were impacting me to that very day in my practice, the way I drove myself and everything were, and my personal relationships were related to the vows I made in the closet at that young age.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, when I read that, you know, to me, it's, you know, I often talk about how, you know, activities and, you know, situations that occur, you know, in childhood really lay the groundwork for some of our strongest belief systems, you know, and how we use those belief systems to, you know, guide our actions. And, you know, and the one thing that I found interesting when reading that one is you talk about the fact that because you were like 4 years old at the time, you know, that the very young, you know, the experience was kind of, stored, you know, in the essence of the cells of the body.
Right, you know, and more recent research on memory has shown that we, before five, the way we store memories is really more related in a physical way, and it's not linear. Like now, when we look back as adults and go back, we can say, oh, yeah, seven, we lived in South Carolina, and that we had a blue house, and, you know, I went to that school, and it's very linear memory, whereas before that age, it's more of a physical or somatic of the body memory. So, and as you just stated, these occurrences in our life, especially when they're related with a very high emotional charge, they get stored in our body, and our brain at that age is learning about the world. So we're absorbing all these experiences and inferring that this is what the world is like. So,
yeah, very much so. You know, and you know, that's the one thing that I just stress, you know, when I see parents, is just to recognize, you know, that the importance of, you know, what it is that they say and do, you know, to the children, and the potential effect that it has on the rest of their life, that it's, you know, it's just so crucial, you know, to, you know, to be supportive. And anyway, I mean, whenever I see a parent, you know, yelling at a child or telling them how worthless they are, I mean, to me, I just cringe at that, you know, because it's like, oh, you know, it just, to me, it's like, oh, you just don't know what you're doing to your child.
Right. And, you know, how really our children learn from us by really watching, and it's the experience. And they, what are they, the saying is your actions speak louder than words. And boy, it comes across, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, now when the memories started to, you know, come to the surface, how did you go about recognizing them as being legitimate, you know, and like, did you have any kind of verification that you went through?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because what people go through, because I do work with people that have suffered the same events in their life, and it's a very common thing to have happen when the memories start to come is, like, do I really remember this? You know, how can I know this? Or, you know, where is this coming from? Am I making this up? And that kind of thing. especially when they're from so young. And so when we go to the body, first of all, in the body's reactions, for example, one of the things that I noticed was when, well, my Rubenfeld synergist noticed was when she touched my face, I would freeze and stop breathing. Now, something happened, you know, it starts to go like the body wouldn't do that, you know.
Right,
Something hadn't happened, so that made me start believing, you know, and I started realizing that even when a friend that I knew very well would touch me, let's say, on the shoulder, or let's say we're watching a play and somebody, you know, sitting beside me would just touch me, I would immediately kind of, all my attention would go to that hand touching my shoulder, and what are they going to do next, you know?
Okay,
But then as I started checking in with my family, and it was verified that there was something going on that wasn't right at that time, and nobody really knew what it was. And apparently, you know, when I told my mom, she hadn't told anyone else because of all the stigma of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, right. And, you know, my mom wasn't one to talk about these things. She might not have even remembered. So she passed away before I was at the point where I really knew what had happened and could ask her. But I was verified in bits and pieces from other, again, like kind of weaving together the tapestry of different people saw different things or knew different parts of it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it is interesting, you know, when you kind of just listen to your body and recognize that, you know, if your body has a particular, like, almost involuntary reaction, you know, to something that, you know, is, I mean, logically, it wouldn't, you know, there should be no reason for that reaction. That, you know, it does make you kind of sit up and take notice as to,
exactly.
You know, what's this all about?
Right, and how much, you know, many people that does happen to, it's like, gee, I don't know why I react that way. What's going on? And the body knows, you know, because the body has its memory of being treated a certain way or receiving certain stimulus, and so it has a conditioned response from that occurrence. And that's why, like, people that have had car accidents, I mean, let's say the car that hit them came from the left side and it was towards the front, and for years, if they don't get some kind of help, many times, anytime a car is coming from that same direction, they'll freeze while driving because the body remembers that.
Yeah, even if the mind doesn't, the body does, that's for sure.
Exactly, even if the mind doesn't recognize, and even the mind might be confused, but if we would listen to the body, and that's the whole point that of my book and my work with other people, is that really the body has a wisdom that it has a completely different point of view of our life that's not intellectual or figuring out. It's very matter of fact. Your body can tell you what's good for you, what it likes, where to go, what choices to make, because it knows us better than anyone, and it always tells the truth.
Yeah, very much so. You know, since you mentioned your mother, there's one of the things that I noticed in your book, you talked about when it was that you told your mother, you know, and one of the things that happens often with people who have had sexual abuse things happen to them is often it's, you know, don't tell anybody, you know, and I mean, just, you know, the regular threats, that kind of thing. And it seems like you were told the same thing, yet at one point you told your mom. One of the chapters in your book is called Loved or Unlovable.
Right.
And, you know, in that you kind of talk about sometimes too, you know, wondering if, you know, by telling that you maybe set up this situation. You know, it seems that the question of am I unlovable or, you know, that kind of thing plagues people who have been abused. So would you mind, the reason I kind of want to spend just a few minutes on this is because I think, you know, that's really common, and I would really love for you to kind of just share, you know, your insight about that particular aspect.
Well, it is something, unfortunately, many times it happens that when finally the person who has suffered abuse finally says something, they're not believed, and they're often shunned or put down or, you know, don't talk about that, what would people think, or all these kind of reactions that make the person feel even more guilty. And one of the really important things for abuse victims to know or to get into their skin is you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. Something wrong happened to you, but you didn't do anything wrong. And that, I think, by thinking, you know, somehow it gets into the system of the person being abused knows it's not right, knows it's wrong, and somehow that gets mm-hmm. into the cells almost like, I'm wrong, I'm bad, you know. And if I'm bad, I'm not lovable. And mm-hmm. how can I make myself better? And there's the drive to work harder and serve others and anticipate others' needs, you know. It's really interesting. I remember when I first started working with Alana Rubenfeld and I took the training, she was, you know, working with people and training us, and there was about 40 of us. But, boy, I was the one who could tell when she was thirsty. She didn't say anything. I mean, I would just be watching her, and I'd go get her a glass of water and hand it to her, and she'd look at me. How did you know? I knew when she needed something, and she would, like, start looking around for something. Maybe it was a pen and paper or what, but I could anticipate, mm-hmm. you know, oh, she needs help with this, or she needs me to move that chair. You know, she, and because I was so wanting also, she was giving me so much, and I wanted to please her, you see.
Right.
So there's that drive somehow gets twisted in there of to be worthy, I need to be very serviceful. I need to anticipate. I need to know what to do. And it's a gift also. You see, that's where... You know,
yeah.
I've turned it into something. I know what my clients need. I can read their body, and I listen to their body, and their body tells me where to go and what to do instead of some book or the x-ray or whatever. It's their body, but I can do that because I got to be very sensitive.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, you know, because that, you know, that's just the one thing. And, you know, and, you know, often, you know, in addition to kind of having to having that internal desire to be loved, you know, to do things to be loved, you know, it's also, it seems that, you know, quite often, you know, those who have been a victim of sexual abuse, sometimes, you know, others view them as less than, you know, for whatever reason, you know, but I mean,
right.
and it's that, you know, and being sensitive to that, you know, then, you know, I'm sure some just, you know, say, okay, you know, this is what they see, you know, this must be what I am.
Right. Well, and it does become a, you know, it's almost like that's why what you mentioned earlier about talking to your children, it's so vital not to say, you know, you're stupid or, you know, call names
mm-hmm.
or these kind of things, because the person takes that in, especially young children, that they say, that is me. There was some comedian
mm-hmm.
on TV the other day, and he was saying his dad cussed so much, and would get upset and take, you know, the Lord's name in vain, and he thought that was his name because he was yelling it all the time. But it's, so there is that kind of fine line, and that's why so many people don't want to talk or say, you know, this whole thing in the news nowadays with what's happening and with the sexual abuse, so many people, and people say, why didn't you say something before? It's because you're so ashamed you don't want to say anything.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And you're going to be like women for years, you know. Well, it must have been the way you were dressing. Well, I could tell
right.
you, you know, before 4 years old, it wasn't the way I was dressing. You know?
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, so there's all these kind of stigmas that I think we really need to bring it out of the closet.
Exactly. You kind of set up for that one perfectly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Yeah, I just want to let listeners know that in about 5 minutes, we're going to take just a quick 90-second break. So if you would like to call in and ask Dr. Tony any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to pose to Dr. Tony, feel free to type them in, and we'll get to them right after the break. Okay. You know, the subtitle of the book, From Injury to Insight. So what did you, you know, what is it that you mean, you know, by insight? Like, what kind of insight did you get? And is insight the end of the road, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I think one insight leads to another. Sometimes, you know, how those light bulbs will go off and go, oh, if that means that, then this means that. So it can be lead to more. And when I speak of insight, also, you know, from that, like, let's say working with the body. When someone, if I can facilitate someone listening to their body, let's say they have a pain in their hip, and if I can facilitate them becoming aware not only that my hip hurts, but how does it hurt? Does it pinch? Does it squeeze? Is it squished? Is it stabbing? And I begin to help them describe first physically, and then sometimes people are visual, so they might see a color or a shape, or some people have a memory that reminds me of, or, you know, we're going in a little deeper. And in the process of doing that, they get out of their intellectual, you know, what did I do? Did I lift something wrong, or did I knock into the open drawer or something like that, which is more of an intellectual trying to find a reason. If I can help them just go into the sensations, what the experience is in that area, the brain waves switch from a day-to-day beta brainwave to a more alpha, which is a more creative state. And then we can look at what does that, again, remind you of? What might that hip say to you? And especially if an emotion comes up, what is your hip angry about? What is your hip feeling stabbed about? It can be either way, to you or from the hip to you. And when they have an insight into, like, oh, my gosh, I feel stabbed because at work my coworker took credit for the thing that I did and I got stepped on, and I got stabbed in the back, you know, or stabbed in the side. And there's a kind of insight that they can go, gee, that really does matter to me. Because what a lot of people do is try to say to themselves, oh, it doesn't matter. That doesn't bother me. I know that that guy took credit for my work, but, you know, I'm over it. When really the body is carrying that, and what we need to do is have that insight that it does bother us. Go through the feelings and see what action needs to be taken so that you feel, what would you say, taken care of, that you feel seen. And then so there's how the insight plays into actually healing. And many times, very simple things where there's, you know, there wasn't an accident or something, will heal just by you receiving the message of, metaphorically, what your body's trying to tell you. So that insight releases the need to have the pain. So, and that, that's, yeah, it's very interesting. And even if there is a reason for an accident or something happened that caused an injury to your body, if you can have insight into the way it feels and the way it is for you, your experience, you'll heal faster and more completely.
That sounds perfect. That's great. Yeah, great approach. Well, okay, we're gonna take just a quick 90-second break here, and then when we come back, I kind of want to talk a little bit. I mean, since we talked about the healing aspect, I want to get your opinion on self-healing. You know, and exactly, you know, is it within all of us, and what about, you know, some, you know, chronic types of diseases, and kind of how all that plays together, okay?
Very good.
Great. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Dr. Toni Luisa Rivera, and we're talking about her new book called The Propelled Heart, Moving from Injury to Insight. Again, you can find out more about her book as well as other things that Dr. Toni has to offer by visiting her website, which is www.toniluisarivera.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back. Dr. Toni.
Hi.
Okay, great.
I'm glad we're back.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about self-healing. You know, the body is a wonderful healing organism, you know, but so can you talk about, how that system works, and are there limitations to our self-healing abilities?
Very good question. I have seen over my 30 years in practice, and just with my spiritual practice and knowing anatomy and physiology, our body is built to be a self-healing organism. And no matter what kind of treatment that we choose to receive, be it conventional medical treatment, acupuncture, naturopath, chiropractic, whatever it be, what all the treatments do is stimulate that life force to return to the area that's having a problem and to heal. So it is the body that takes whatever treatment it receives to heal. And even in serious diseases or organ disease, the body is what needs to be coaxed to respond. And I'm thinking of how, there's from the simple to the more complicated, right? And as I was just speaking a little while ago, that simple things many times, like you wake up with an ache or a pain, or something's been bothering you and it's continuing, and the first thing the mind tries to do is figure out, what did I do or what did I not do to make that happen? And sometimes the body is just trying to get a message through to you. And so those things are more simple. And if we only treat the symptom, however, many times it'll just move to another place and the other side or whatever, you know. And more complicated disease, there is still a lesson that can be learned. And this is one of the exercises that's in the book. And in the second part of the book, we discuss topics, and then I have exercises for people to look at themselves. And one of the ones that seems to be very, very interesting for people is the looking at organ disease, because there's many different things in our society, but very common is diabetes. And in our area, for some reason, there's a lot of hypothyroidism, low functioning thyroid. But one of the exercises is to find a layman's source to explain the function, the normal function of that organ that's affected. So looking at looking how the organ should work in as simple a language and in as few paragraphs or sentences as possible, and then to look at what does the diagnosis really mean, because usually, you know, it's some Latin word for what's happening to us, but to really understand what is happening in my body that this word refers to, or these several words, and then compare what is the normal function to what is the word mean of the diagnosis, and right there is a metaphorical or a representation of what's happening, what's not working correctly, may very often is what's not working right in your life. So there we have the body of the wisdom, the body wisdom trying to talk to us and get us a message. And of course, at the point of getting a diagnosis, many times you do need medical treatment. And if you can understand the dynamic of what's happening in your life, you can make different choices and take a different course that will help resolve the issue besides the treatment that you might need.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Okay, so, and I understand, you know, what you're saying. It, basically, our body is trying to get our attention about some particular aspect that's kind of out of whack with ourselves that we need to kind of bring in alignment. You know, some people believe that we create, you know, things that happen to us. So, now, my question is that, okay, we've got a case where, let's say, we have our energy field, something is not in alignment, that then maybe is brought into the body for the body to let us know about it. I guess my question is, do we kind of create the energy field, which then in turn creates the disease in the body?
You know, it's such a kind of a problem, I think, nowadays, too, that the New Age guilt, and we have to watch a little bit there, right? Because if you're already so depressed because you've been diagnosed with some kind of cancer, and then you go into, oh, my gosh, I'm creating this, I'm doing this to myself, and you start going down that road, it's not very helpful. But if we look at that the disease manifesting itself and getting a diagnosis is actually whatever we might call the universe, God, universal intelligence, divine mother, however we want to say that source greater than ourselves, is trying to let us know something about ourselves, about our way of being in our life, and that it's actually not a test or a punishment, but that actually it's an opportunity to discover something about ourselves and to learn something from it. And it's a much healthier and helpful attitude to take it like that. So I don't feel like we create the things. I think that these things occur or evolve, if you will, in order for us to have the experiences we need to learn the lessons we need to learn.
Yeah, well, I am so happy to hear you say that, you know, because, you know, that, first of all, you know, the idea of, you know, creating, you know, the disease, I mean, the idea of guilt, you know, what am I doing wrong? What did I do wrong? You know, and you're right, that does mentally make the learning more difficult, you know, because if you have to get through that. But, you know, and it seems that, you know, if it's the whole process is for us to become more aware, you know, and to learn from and to maybe even teach as a result of our awareness. To me, that's so much more positive way of looking at circumstances that happen, challenging circumstances that happen to us.
It's so true. And, you know, the difference between curing and healing? It's a very interesting question, because curing is really focused on the symptom. So any way to eradicate the symptom is considered you cured it. But the underlying problem may very well still be there, again, to crop up in another way, and perhaps in a more serious way, so that if we avoid symptoms and just cure them, we might be allowing something to grow under the surface. Where healing is when you look at the whole aspect, the holistic aspect of your life, you know, and none of us is getting out of here alive,
right.
like they say.
Right.
But the idea of healing our life while we're here, and really taking the opportunities that arise to learn. One of my favorite places to go for healing in the world is Optimum Health Institute in San Diego, and they call when people come with some kind of disease, it's a healing opportunity. They
mm-hmm.
don't say, you know, disease or, you know, that a health challenge. It's an opportunity to learn and grow and to make different choices, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's the one thing that I've been doing this show for 5 years and have talked to so many, literally hundreds of people who have become victors, you know, rather than victims, you know, overcoming, you know, what it is, whatever kind of struggle that, you know, they had endured, and then being a light, you know, to be able to, you know, kind of, you know, shed light on, you know, to, the situation for other people to make their lives easier, you know,
right.
And to, you know, so to me, and it's kind of goes beyond just the self-healing. It's kind of like healing everyone that you come into contact with.
So true. It is, it's almost like an energy is created that brings hope and new choice, opens doors for everybody around
mm-hmm.
who experiences that person's attitude and energy in their situation. It's a blessing.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to healing, can you talk a little bit about the importance of valuing oneself and the state of mind that is maybe that would bring about a higher level or maybe a deeper type of healing?
You know, I noticed in my own healing journey, I would come back and around again, looking at the choices I make in my life every day, that there was something about, and it goes back to what we talked about earlier, right, about feeling wrong or bad, and somehow not valuing oneself as much as others around you. And when that happens, when we don't value ourselves, it tends to stifle our creative not only the creation of new things around us, but our willingness to share anything that comes to us because we don't think it's of value. And
mm-hmm.
we all have to realize that, you know, there never will be another you. Each person is unique. And the duty that we have is not only a right, you know, and this is how it evolved for me was I started looking at how I valued myself, and I said, wait a minute, I have a right to live my life, to enjoy the things I enjoy, and to make the choices that I want to make because it's my life. It's my life. It's not somebody else's and what they might like me to do. And then it evolved into that really it's our duty to be all we can be and to value ourselves and to express our opinions and our point of view, because no one else can do it. So it's our duty to be the best me and you to be the best you, because it's in us being our uniqueness that we can come together and build something together to share with each other and inspire each other by being our own unique self. So that self-worth, that self-value is really important. And unfortunately, I think in our culture, it's lacking. You know, I think that's one of the problems
yeah.
is that, you know, people are devaluing themselves.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I noticed the one chapter in your part two was called the duty to live your life, and I thought, you know, that's it really is. I mean, it is our responsibility to live our life and really kind of take control through the choices that we make, you know, as to which direction it should take. Now, what do you think? I mean, this is kind of a little bit maybe off topic, but, you know, I agree that a lot of times, you know, it seems like self-value is lacking a lot in today's society. I mean, do you have any ideas of, you know, why it is that so many people seem to not, you know, give that? I mean, is it because maybe we see all of these, I mean, there's this constant attention to fame and that kind of thing, and maybe comparing ourselves to others as far as value and really what is value? You know, maybe there's a discussion needed to be what is value?
I think you're onto something there because, and as we're speaking, and, you know, it seems like there's the two extremes happening nowadays, right? We have the people who don't value themselves, and then the people who overvalue their opinion and themselves. Uh-huh. And I feel like that balance is so necessary that and there is one of the exercises in the book also. It's funny because when I say that word exercises, being a chiropractor, I have to be careful because people are looking for, you know, strengthen my biceps or something, right? But I mean body-mind experiential, they're really experiences that you can do with yourself. And one of them is looking at do you devalue or do you overvalue yourself and how are you in relationship to others? And we can really learn a lot from that. But I think you're onto something is what do we value, you know? And what I'm referring to is seeing the worth of ourselves as an individual and as a human being in this life and as a soul. Having a human experience, and we're where we're at, we think the way we do, perhaps it's evolution from other lifetimes, perhaps it's something else, but that essence of who we are, not the car we drive and the house we live in, mm-hmm. and how much money we have and how many records did I sell and all that, and so it's a value not of material worth, but of that everyone has value because we are here. And God doesn't make mistakes, and God or Divine Mother or however we want to say, the goddess, that there is no mistake that we're here, born, walking around as we are, and influencing others through just being who we are, that we have value. We have inherent value.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Kind of on church, since you mentioned how many records we sell and like that, you know, when I first started the show, I was obsessed with numbers, you know. I was like, oh, who was listening, how many were listening? You know, just actually in the very beginning, it was just because I was curious, you know.
Right.
I really wasn't, in the beginning, I wasn't even really sold myself on the fact that I would be doing a radio show and that there would be, anyone would listen to it, you know. 5 years later, you know, they are. So, but there was one particular show I had a woman on who wrote out her story, and it was called Love Fraud, how marriage to a sociopath, you know, led her onto a spiritual journey, you know. And I was like, you know, when I first signed her up for the show, I thought, oh, what am I doing? You know, I know nothing about this. And then when the show aired, I mean, there were truly just very few listened to it. And I thought, oh, you know, I kind of thought that was going to be the case. And the few that listened, I got some just amazing feedback on how important it was to the listener that person speak and that they heard her, that her referrals on her website led them to get out of the situations they were. I mean, it was just,
yes.
And at that moment, that was when I, for me, I recognized value as being, you know, I needed to really shift my view of what was valuable.
It's so true. And, you know, we don't know that whole, the ripple effect, you know, how one way of being, perhaps something we say in the grocery store and the person behind us here, we don't know how it ripples out. And in a show like yours where you don't know who's listening and who those people who are listening are talking to and who those people tell and how the influence is immeasurable. You know, it's valuable. Yeah, and you can't tell how many people you're touching.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those cases where it just seems really important to follow your intuition, you know.
Yes.
And you also, you talk about, you know, intuition as well. And, you know, first of all, what is your sense of, is intuition innate in everyone and just that it's strength is just based on like a muscle, how much it's used?
I think that we're all intuitive, and some people don't think they are. They think it's some kind of special power, and we all are intuitive. Everyone's had the experience of perhaps a phone ringing and, you know, you think of somebody or you remember a friend and then they call you, or these are intuitive hits, and it is, it can be developed. It can be enhanced. And I've developed a workshop series called Intuition Mastery, where I have developed exercises to assist people in getting to know their own intuition, how their intuition is speaking to them. And the definition that I use for intuition is that it is the bridge between our soul, our all-knowing, omniscient soul, to our ego. And the clearer that bridge is when we've used it in practice and we know what it's saying. And some of us are, again, more visual or kinesthetic or emotional. And these are the ways that our intuition comes to us. And conscience is also a function of intuition, where we just know intuitively when something's wrong or when somebody walks in the room and we go, whoa, you know, watch out for that guy, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever that is. And that's the intuition. And we can learn and use it to make decisions and to guide our life. And the body oftentimes is a way that intuition is speaking to us, a feeling in your gut or your heart or some maybe words come in your mind and you just, from where'd that come from? And you know something, and we all have that ability.
Yeah, you know, that was when I've been surrounded by intuitive people for a long time, and I was like, oh, man, you know, I wish I could, you know, listen more to my tours. How do I know if it's not my monkey mind, you know, talking
right.
versus intuitive mind? And it was truly those off the wall, like, where did that come from kind of things that really got my attention to recognize, to discern a little bit more, you know, what was an intuitive hit
mm-hmm.
versus a mental kind of process.
Yeah, when I'm working with people in workshops or one-on-one, when the body speaks, like which sounds strange to people at first, but when you talk to that knee that hurts or whatever, it is an intuitive exercise. And one of the tests is if it's long orations, that's the monkey mind. If it's brief, 3 to 5 words, you know, that's the body. That's the intuition. It's very direct. It's right to the point. It doesn't go on and on, well, what if, and maybe, and you know. No.
Oh, that's a really good, I like that. I'm going to be employing that as well to help my discernment a little bit more. Gosh, well, we're down to the last 5 minutes, Dr. Tony. And there's just one more question I want to ask. You know, since we're talking about the self-healing ability of the body, and we're talking about intuition as kind of the bridge between the body and soul, do you feel that and we deal with body, mind, and spirit, do you feel that the mind and spirit also have self-healing abilities?
I do. I feel that all that we need, all the knowledge, all the wisdom is within each one of us. What we need to heal, what we need to look at, the lessons that need to be learned to heal, is all within us. The wisdom is held within. And if we can learn to access it, to open that door to our own inner wisdom, we are able to heal all aspects of self.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, I'll let my mind and my soul know that they got all they need. Get to work. Oh, goodness. Well, gosh, is there, and I've really enjoyed our conversation, is there maybe any final thoughts you might want to share with the listeners that we didn't cover, or just maybe any additional information you'd like to let us know before we end the show?
Yeah, I want everyone to know that your body really is your greatest ally. It's not an enemy. It's not out to get you. It's really your greatest ally. And by turning to it and learning to have a relationship with your body, with your mind, with your heart, you can heal. And for all those who have suffered abuse, again, of any kind, is that you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dr. Tony, I really want to thank you for your time today. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation.
Me too. It's been such a pleasure to be with you, Robert.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Tony Luisa Rivera, and we have been speaking about her new book called The Propelled Heart, Moving from Injury to Insight. And again, you can find out more about Dr. Tony and her book by visiting her website, which is www.tonyluisarivera.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.